Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Great to have you with us on this Tuesday. Jack Hamm joining us today. Ron Cook joining us today. Neil Coulon joining us today. Later in the week, we'll have Tony Knopp, the CEO of Spotlight Ticket Management. Stanley Jackson of BTN. Yeah. Not bad, huh? And Paul Keels, the play-by-play voice of Ohio State. Cannot leave the great one out of the conversation. I was on with Paul, Jim Lachey, John Cooper, Skip Mossick last night in Columbus on their show. And they asked me about the whiteout. This is after we got through all the serious football questions that we're going to have a little fun. And so Skip asked about whether Penn State would ever wear white jerseys at a whiteout. And I said, are you serious, Skip? I said, have you noticed that this place is somewhat rooted in tradition? White helmets, no names on the back, black shoes, still on the east sideline with the sun in their eyes. Same band routine to open up since 1966, or 1965, I think, actually. I said, Penn State was playing Maryland last year in Baltimore. I mentioned that Maryland was wearing their throwback jerseys, and I said Penn State is also wearing their throwback jerseys.
Wait a minute, I remember hearing that.
those are Penn State jerseys. Wait a minute. Took a little while for Jack to calm down after that one. He was laughing. I said, wait a minute, Penn State is wearing their throwback jerseys. They are wearing the regular jerseys. There you go. Oh, you got to have a little bit of fun.
You do. It's got to break the monotony up.
Oh, for goodness sake, you know, have a little bit of fun. Now, Jose Bautista has made some interesting comments where it's been more, I don't know, innuendo about the umpiring in the series. Interesting. But it was more innuendo. But you know what? If you get to the NCAA Final Four, you want to know as an umpire, as a referee, how you got there? How you graded out in the rest of the tournament on merit? Super Bowl, conference semifinal or league quarterfinal. That weekend, the Super Bowl officials are selected after that weekend based on, merit. Stanley Cup Final, merit. Yeah. Now, let's get to Major League Baseball. Guess how Major League Baseball selects umpires? Now, as you know, I am not big on the vagaries of language used at the highest levels in this country over the last 20 to 25 years, where you sit back and go, well, what does that mean? Okay? Okay, Major League Baseball postseason umpire assignments. Do you know how they're done? To the most deserving. Really? What does that mean?
So most deserving meaning, do the other umpires in the league, like, vote?
No, it's your turn.
Huh.
That's what it means. I mean, the words most deserving mean nothing, per usual.
So there's no group out of Rob Manfred's office that deems who's deserving.
No.
I'm just trying to figure out who would be the one that would make the call of who's deserving.
Okay. Last data I have. I think this is last year. Either last year or 2014, one of the two. There are 79 umpires in Major League Baseball with full assignments. There are obviously some part-time guys. Right? Now listen to this. In the American League Championship Series, these are 79 umpires that are full-time umpires. Here's the ALCS crew from what, a year ago, 2 years ago, one of the two. Joe West, crew chief, accuracy rank, 65. Brian Gorman, 77. Marvin Hudson, 55. Dan Isorga, 63. Ron Culpa, 68. Tim Timmons, 67. Mark Wegner, 13. Okay. NLCS, accuracy rank. Crew chief Jerry Davis, 10. Mark Carlson, 37. Phil Cusey, 16. Paul Emmel, 51. Greg Gibson, 2. Bill Miller, 71. Bill Welke, 75. So the 14 umpires that were selected, only 5 were in the top 40, which means that puts you, we'll be generous here, that's the upper half. 5 out of 14. Really? Really?
You would think the Mendoza line would be, what, 50? And that's being pretty generous?
I'm saying, but that's how you selected the NLCS and the ALC most deserving. What does that mean? I can tell you what it means. It means nothing. They didn't say most accurate. They didn't say on merit. They said, they sat down in a room and they said, let's come up with a really vague term because this is how America operates these days. We use vague terms. No one has the guts to really say what really is happening. Okay? Most deserving. In other words, we have a collective bargaining agreement. Everybody gets to take a turn. And these 14 had their turn. Really? Nobody talks about it. Nobody talks about it. Jose Bautista brings it up and they go, oh, I shouldn't be talking about it. But it's the Super Bowl. You are rated. First of all, to do a playoff game in the NFL, you must be in the top-ranked group to get in. In order to advance in the NFL playoffs, you must be the top-ranked group to get in. All right. To get to the Super Bowl, you've got to be the graded out the highest in the quarterfinal weekend to get there. Or the conference semifinals, however you want to put it. Okay? To get to the Super Bowl. NCAA basketball tournament, based on merit and on grading, you get into the tournament. You only advance to the next weekend based on how you graded out in the opening weekend. And then out of that second weekend, you grade out as to who the 9 officials will be that will work the final 4. 3 in semifinal 1, 3 in semifinal 2, and the 3 highest graded out work the final. That's how the NCAA tournament works. Major League Baseball doesn't work that way. Now, it has nothing to do with the fact the Indians are beating the Jays. I could care less who's winning the series. But Bautista makes a statement, and everybody kind of, what does that mean? What's he doing? You know what? Guess what? Do some research. Figure it out. Major League Baseball says it's the most deserving. Most deserving of what? What does that mean? Okay, it means it's your turn. And again, I can't stomach the vagaries of language these days. We'll come up with a clever way to make you think one thing when in reality it's just nothing. Well, most deserving sounds impressive. Was it most deserving because you had a great season working the plate? Is it most deserving because, hey, you know what? You've had a great career. Go ahead. Give it one more shot. What does it mean? Does it mean anything? The vagaries of language, the way it's been used with focus groups, with being too cool for school and a little bit too clever in the last 20 to 25 years in this country, has driven me nuts listening to it. Because you'll sit there and say, what does that mean? Most deserving sounds like a great term. Okay? Guess what? It means zilch. And if you're smart enough to think about it, smart enough to figure it out, you know it means nothing. I don't get it. Don't you want the best for your game out there? I mean, these guys will make mistakes. But I know the umpiring union has always had the attitude that all 79 are created equal. They've always had that attitude. And believe me, to umpire Major League Baseball, you've got to be really, really good. So that part I understand. But I made this point many, many times. I gave you the Tommy Armour III reference about, hey, these guys don't stink. They're just not as good as Tiger Woods. Okay? Well, it's the same thing with this. Major League umpires do not stink. They are not bad at their jobs at all. But there are some that are better than others. And now it's money on the table time. It should be the best 14 umpires working these series right now, and the best 7 out of these 2 series working the World Series, or the best 6, I should say. So it should be the best 12 and the best 6. I mean, you can't have it this way. You just can't. You know, I mentioned 14 umpires. You remember each one has an alternate, okay? That's why there's an extra umpire in there. They're an alternate there. Most deserving. Like Ben Reichle, most deserving co-host. Most deserving of what? He's sitting there like, how'd that come up? Why is my name in the conversation? All right. We'll take a break. We'll come back with more in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Heading into week 9 of the high school football season. There's a lot of talk that we should do a fan vote on the WKOK football broadcast. If Alonzo's been that good, maybe we should put it out to a fan vote. But, you know, I mean, Sean, would you walk away from your job?
I'd check my nest egg first. Make sure all my, you know, my investments are in order. And
hey, would you look at all? I mean, really, I'm more important than everybody now. Okay. He's sitting there like, I can't believe this. I'm home suffering. He's doing a lot better, by the way. Seems like he's getting a little bit better every day. He sent me a really good text message on Saturday. He wanted to know if I was putting up Christmas lights. I said, no. I don't do that this time of the year any longer. There's fewer things to do with it, so it's all good. All good. Next half hour, Neil Coulong. Well, you must be excited about Landry Jones, huh?
At least Ben is not out for the season. I'm trying to look at this as positive as best I can.
So. You know what gets me, in all seriousness? How can you be in the league and work every day with a coach, with a quarterback coach, which they work with every day, and still have mediocre footwork like he does? His footwork is so mediocre for a pro-level quarterback. I mean, that's what causes, footwork causes inaccuracy issues. You look at the footwork of Carson Wentz, really, really good. You look at the footwork of Kirk Cousins, really, really good. Look at the footwork of Landry Jones. Now, look, he's a backup, so he's not a starter. So you're not going to expect him to be all world. You're a backup quarterback in the league for a reason. But you would think after all this time that his footwork issues would at least improve some, because it would be a point of emphasis. And he has no idea where Antonio Brown is. How can you be in the league that long and watch that much tape and not know where Antonio Brown is? I mean, he's watching the same tape that Roethlisberger's watching. Probably in the quarterback room watching it together. How can you not know where 84 is? All right, a lot going on today. Neil Coulong, we'll talk about that. Neil mentioned to me something about Steeler fans suddenly finding religion around this game. That means. Oh, please. Let him play well.
I found religion. I've just been praying just a little more the last couple of days.
Help us just 1 week. Help us, please, 1 week. I know you got a lot on your plate.
I would even settle at this point if he's out till the Dallas game. That means an extra week of healing.
He might be back in time for the Ravens.
That's true.
We'll talk to Ron Cook about that today.
Yep.
And next half hour, Neil Coulong. Jack Ham scheduled today. We're brought to you by our good friends at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. On News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Time now for this day in sports history. 1873, the first rules for intercollegiate football were drawn up by representatives from Rutgers, Yale, Columbia, and Princeton. 1924, Red Grange of Illinois scored 4 touchdowns in the opening 12 minutes of a game against Michigan. Scored a 5th touchdown, intercepted a pass, and threw a touchdown pass in the second half. It was the game that really catapulted him to national fame. Eventually went on and played in the NFL. And then he started with his agent, C.C. Pyle, the AFL. And they barnstormed so much that, and played so many games in a short period of time, it ended up hurting him. 1950, Connie Mack announced that he was going to retire after 50 seasons as the manager of the Philadelphia A's. 1956, NFL Commissioner Burt Bell disallowed the use of radio-equipped helmets by NFL quarterbacks. Paul Brown of the Cleveland Browns is the one that developed the idea. 1967, the American League granted permission for the A's to leave Kansas City and move to Oakland. Then they awarded new franchises to Kansas City, the Royals, and the Seattle Pilots, who now are the Milwaukee Brewers. 1968, Tommy Smith and John Carlos suspended from the U.S. by the U.S. Olympic Committee for giving the Black Power salute at the medal ceremony in Mexico City. Let's see. And in 1977, Reggie Jackson tied Babe Ruth's record for hitting three home runs in a single World Series game. And he did it on three consecutive pitches that he saw. Amazing. Against the Dodgers. All right, let's bring in Neil Coulong to talk about the Pittsburgh Steelers. Neil, welcome back. When Landry Jones was in there last year, what made you feel like he was making progress, and what were a couple of areas where you said to yourself, he's not making any, and he's just stagnating?
The stints that he had last year, I think, were really choppy, really uneven, and only the real one that we can evaluate was his four-quarter performance against the Chiefs, and I believe that was week seven. He got in part of week six and then started in week seven. He really looked erratic in the sense that it takes him so much longer to process what a defense is giving him, where his receivers are on the field. And with that, it just kind of seems like he's moving his head around a bit. His body doesn't move fluidly with him, and he ends up, you know, kind of airmailing passes all over the field. His accuracy is a real concern, and there are many of them for him. This is kind of the point where you have to caution that, yes, he's a backup quarterback in the NFL. You do get spoiled when you see one that's as good as Ben Roethlisberger is, but the drop-off between them really is remarkable. I mean, I can't say that there's that steep of a difference between one position to its backup anywhere else in sports. I very well could be wrong. I'm not an expert of other sports, but Jones is really a below average quarterback, and I don't think that he will have improved any when we look back at the game on Sunday. I don't think we're going to see a great effort from him.
Why is it he can't seem to find Antonio Brown? Antonio Brown seems to do a brilliant job of finding space in zones, and Jones can't seem to find him. Why?
I think, and just on observations, the key thing for Jones is just the fact that he doesn't recognize where Brown is going to be, when he's going to break. He doesn't have that familiarity with him. And by the time that he would recognize it, it's too late. The lane would have already closed, and that's true of any receiver in the game, even the best ones playing at the NFL. You really don't have a large window to say a receiver is open unless something goes terribly wrong, like it did for the Steelers several times on Sunday. It's harder to get a receiver the ball when you don't really seem to know where he is, when he's going to, you know, come out of his break or anything. And Roethlisberger and Brown really have that connection. Ben is, you know, the ball is out of his hands before Brown's even breaking in his route. He throws him open, so to speak. I don't think, not that Brown can't get open on his own, but when you have both of those things working for you, it's a tremendous advantage, and that's why they've been as prolific as they have been over the last 4 years. Jones doesn't have the ability. He doesn't have the arm strength. He doesn't have the vision. He doesn't have the anticipation. All of those things play into it, and it's true of him with every receiver, and this is, you know, a big part of the reason why he's, I believe, a career 56% completion quarterback. The biggest plays he ever made were shorter throws that Martavis Bryant and Brown took to the house in big moments in the games that he got in last year. He didn't have any really against Kansas City, and they got beat fairly handily from what I remember. That game wasn't really all that competitive in the second half.
Right. The timing of this, they play the Patriots, then it's a bye week, then Baltimore. Is that really the best scenario in terms of an injury like this they could have asked for with Roethlisberger based on the procedure that was done to him?
Yeah, I mean, as a non medical professional, what I've found out in my research is really that there are two types of surgeries with this. One has a much longer prognosis for recovery than the other one does, and he had the mild one. A fairly clean, pretty routine operation. Everything went smoothly from what we heard. And there's reason to think that he could be back against Baltimore, but even if he is back, you can't expect him to have the same kind of mobility that he has.
Right.
That really affects a lot of his game. And if you really hinder him and kind of tether him to the pocket, he doesn't make as many plays down the field. It doesn't pressure the defense as much deeper in the secondary. And really for him, if he's not making those big plays down the field, or he's not able to at least from the pocket, is because he's getting pressured. And certainly the Baltimore Ravens know all about pressuring Roethlisberger. and the success that they can have with it. So even if he is back, you got to look at that being a pretty tough game for the Steelers, just from the perspective of, you know, not having a quarterback who's going to be at the level they need to play at.
Now, obviously, they lose to the Dolphins, but it's not all what the offense did or didn't do. The Dolphins' offense has not been great this year. Why did the Steelers struggle so much against them?
I think really that their game plan was to attack the Steelers where they were weak. I mean, the absence of Cam Hayward, I think, has been you know, not unreported completely, but largely underrated in that game because of the injury to Roethlisberger and because of the futility of the offense. Hayward was missed sorely in that game. It was not an accident that they had as much success running as they did. And it, at that point, especially with, you know, kind of a wake-up call given to their offensive line, two guys who performed pretty poorly up to that point in the season were released, not even just benched. They flat-out cut them. They brought in some guys that played a much better game, but the Steelers were really undermanned up front, and they got beat up on both sides of the ball. I think that's really what the story of the game was. Defensively, they could not hold down that outside lane to the offense's left side. And Ajayi really did a great job. I mean, he's a good running back. He's a powerful guy. He's a big guy. They gave him all he could handle and more. I mean, what did he have, 27, 28 carries, including the last one he broke off for 66 yards, and I thought he was going to collapse at the end of it and not be able to get up again. But he played a great game. You have to give it to him in that sense. I think they really got after the you know, kind of a weakened Steelers defense up front. Really, it you know, the house of cards came tumbling down with one thing. Without Ryan Shazier, you don't have the speed to the outside the way that they would. Vince Williams, I think, has played well, but they really tried to stay away from him to make him move laterally as much as possible, and it worked. Without question, it worked, and the Steelers had no answer for it for four quarters of that game.
Does this, you know, when you look at the Patriots, say we match up man-to-man, check mark, you know, Antonio Brown is better than Edelman, you know, things like that. The Steelers probably have better man-to-man personnel in many spots than people realize. So now you watch Brady through two games. When you've watched him, how does he look to you?
You know, to be honest, I thought he was a little bit off against Cincinnati. I thought Cincinnati did a good job of mixing things up for him. They confused him. You know, the first half was not, you know, the kind of Tom Brady I expected it to be in front of the home crowd, just going out and, you know, just bombing 30-yard dimes all over the field. They really mixed it up well. I think Cincinnati is a team that's kind of struggling to get out of its own way right now. That was a really tough game for them. You know, all things considered, I definitely didn't think they'd win it, but they were competitive. I thought they fought pretty hard against New England. But in the end, New England just really has an excellent scheme with an excellent quarterback. And that's the thing with Brady. He really doesn't have bad games. He can have games that aren't up to his standard, and rebound and recover in the second half and play pretty well, which I think he did. When you have weapons like Rob Gronkowski, it certainly makes things a lot easier.
Yeah, and he's an impossible matchup. He's too quick for a linebacker to cover, and he's too big for a safety to cover. And I mean, the Patriots have done a great job of exploiting matchups for years. They always seem to be ahead of the curve when it comes to the ability to pick out a matchup that they love, and then they attack it ad nauseum all day long. So what matchup worries you?
A lot of them. you have to look at Gronkowski just for the same reasons that you mentioned. It's the, you know, the same cliche argument. I mean, Gronkowski is probably one of the few players we can look at outside of the quarterback position in the NFL who's probably a surefire Hall of Famer for his impact on this generation. And it's for the reasons that you mentioned. He's even bigger than a regular tight end, and he's even faster than a fast tight end.
Right.
You put all those things together, and yeah, really, you can't match. You're not going to be able to match him up with any one guy. You have to roll coverage over the top. And when you're doing that for a guy that's primarily running down the seam, you're going to get roasted on the outside if you need to be. And that's really what the Patriots have done. You know, the matchup the Steelers will have in that, and they've done this in the past, they've played dime and put a cornerback on him. And I think to some degree you need to do that, but it really is a question of not letting him get off the line. They're going to have to find a way to chip him, to slow him down. And they've tried to do that in the past and had some success with it. If you can really have a great amount of success against Gronkowski consistently. Last year, though, what I remember is in 2013 as well, when he went all over, you know, that 55-point game that the Patriots put on him, They weren't covering him on the line. They let him just have a free release, and they, even to the point where they put him a step off the line so they could have their receiver up on the line and attack down the field. The Steelers seem more concerned with that than they did with Gronkowski. So he eats up a cushion pretty quickly, and he's, you know, 13 yards down the field on top of the safety that he's twice the size of. Those kinds of things are going to be really difficult for the Steelers to stop, just because he is Rob Gronkowski. And on top of that, it sounds like they're not going to have Cam Hayward again. So no. I'm going to go out on a limb and guess that the Patriots are really going to want to get LeGarrette Blount the ball. They're really going to want him to be a factor in this game, largely because I don't have any faith the Steelers are going to be able to stop their running game consistently. And anything that they can do to keep even Landry Jones off the field, you know, Belichick's the guy that's going to want to do that. So they're in for a tough haul. I don't think this is going to be pretty.
Neil, always a pleasure. Appreciate the time.
Definitely. Thanks for having me.
Yes, among the most deserving, without doubt. All right, we will come back with more in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK. When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you. The other guy's way or the SMC way? The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years. Great to have you with us, Jack Hamm, next half hour to talk about the game this week. Ron Cook, final half hour. Tomorrow, Paul Keels, play-by-play voice of Ohio State football. Later in the week, Tony Knopf, CEO, Spotlight Ticket Management. Stanley Jackson, BTN. High school football previews. We got a lot going on this week. A lot. So just keep everybody up to date, and you go from there. And we just want to make sure that you keep up to date on what's going on. And also our guest list, when Sean, I know, is working out a few other people. So we'll do that. So Jack Hamm next half hour. Then Paul Keels tomorrow, Ron Cook today. See Tony Knopf. And we got a lot going on. Lot going on. Stanley Jackson. I think you'll enjoy that. I think you'll enjoy Tony Knopf. You know, I mean, everybody seems to enjoy having when Tony's on the show. Talk about a wide variety of things. Yeah, I'm not, you know, as you know, I've never been big on doing shows such as, you know, what's your favorite color of the Eagles uniform? I mean, like, really? Like, irrelevant. Just don't like doing that. It's going to be interesting on Saturday. For one thing, the home field is huge. It's huge. Especially the young football team. But it's interesting about Ohio State, though. Ohio State is a young team. There's no question about that. Except they're old in key spots. If I had to pick a football team where I was young, but I needed to have a veteran someplace, there would be 5 critical spots that I would want to be old in with a young football team. And Ohio State has 4 of those 5. I'd want a veteran quarterback. I'd want a veteran center. You're like, a veteran center? What is it?
remember, who calls out all the line assignments? Who calls them out? The center does. Who's the one that gets you in the proper spot is the center. I want a veteran. It doesn't hurt that the guy next to him, Billy Price, next to Pat Elflein, veteran guard, they do a lot of damage in those two spots. Three, I'd want to have a veteran middle linebacker, Raekwon McMillan. I want to have a veteran safety. Now, that they don't have. Now, they have safeties that have six games of experience now, but they don't have a veteran safety. Webb was moved over from corner to safety, but that's still an adjustment. And then I'd want a veteran lockdown corner. They've got Conley. So in four of the five spots that I feel it's absolutely critical to overcome a young football team where you have veterans, they've got four guys out of five. Now, that's not talked about very often. Everybody looks at the in general and so forth. And I understand that. They see the redshirt freshmen, the redshirt sophomores, juniors, things like that, playing for them. And I completely understand that. You know, Tyquan Lewis is a veteran. He's probably the best defensive lineman. The three linebackers, Worley, Baker. I'll tell you right now, ever since Dante Booker went out in the first game and Jerome Baker's taken over 17 at linebacker on the outside, he's really, really good. Very quick. Sometimes out of position, but really, really good. And then McMillan, as you know, I've talked about McMillan how many times in the last 3 years on the show. I think he's terrific. And then Conley at that one corner is a lockdown kind of guy. He may not be Jordan Lewis, but he's really good. He's in the top five, I think, in the conference. I also think John Reed's in the top five in the conference in a corner. Now, the one thing they don't have is they don't have the veteran at safety because Webb played corner last year and he got flipped over to safety. So, yeah, he's older, but still it's a little different when you're changing positions. And he missed a lot of time last year because he was suspended. So, and it doesn't hurt they've got a veteran punter, too. And this guy's averaging almost 51 yards a punt. 51 yards a punt. That's something else.
Well, a lot of times with you and Jack in the broadcast, there's quite a few scenarios that flipping the field is key, depending on how the game shakes out.
Well, you're going to get into a chess game. And if you get into a chess game, close game, you got to be able to flip the field. That's one of the problems that Penn State had 2 years ago against Ohio State because, I mean, they had them. But they couldn't flip the field enough with the kicking game to make a big difference, especially in the first half. Now, the first half, that game was fraught with. There were a lot of third-party mistakes in that game. The Bell interception that wasn't an interception. The play clock running out on the field goal, which was right at the distance. That was his career long, 49 yards. A 5-yard penalty there means it would have been 54. I think they would have punted. Now, you don't know. They could have punted, and Penn State could have turned it over. You don't know what's going to happen. I'm just saying. Those were two big moments in the first half. Now, the Bell thing led to a touchdown. But it also doesn't mean that, Penn State doesn't punt the ball away, and they drive downfield and get it. I don't know. Nobody knows. All right, Jack Ham, next half hour. The great man returns to the show. The two of us have decided we will do the game on Saturday. Why not? Today's show brought to you by our good friends at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, key routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf on News Radio 1070 WKOK.